shelf right around here somewhere. Just keep quiet. I don't want to wake her up. You know? Oh, hey, look who's here.
Hey, Ma, what's going on? What are you doing? What happened?
No, nothing. What happened to you? I hit something on the road. What happened to him?
Oh, I haven't seen you so long. What happened for you? I hate to see him that way. And you too. How are you?
Good.
What happened? Tell me what happened. Well, he came in. You came in. I figured, you know.
I'm so happy to see him.
Look, go inside, make yourselves comfortable.
I'll make you something to eat. Go to sleep.
No, I can't sleep. Not while he's home. No, I haven't seen him so long. No. I want to see him. Then just go inside.
This stuff is great, but it's like lead.
So tell me, where have you been? I haven't seen you. You haven't even called or anything. Where have you been?
Well, Mom, I've been working nights.
And?
Tonight we were out late. We took a ride out to the country, and we hit one of those deers. That's where the blood came from, I tell you. Jimmy told you before, I won't change. Anyway, you know, it reminds me, I need this knife. I'm gonna take this, it's okay?
Okay, yeah.
I just need it for
bring
a little
it back, though, you know.
Well, the poor thing, you know, we hit the deer in his paw, what do you call it?
The hoof
got caught in the grill. Oh. I gotta hack it off.
Ooh.
Ma, it's a sin. You gotta leave it there, you know. So, anyway, I'll bring your knife back if they do that. Anyway.
Delicious.
Thank you. Why don't you get yourself a nice girl?
I get a nice one almost every night, Ma.
Yeah, but get yourself a girl so you could settle down. That's what I mean.
I settle down almost every night, but then in the morning I'm free. I love you. I want to be with you.
Why don't you settle down?
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care. And though my pocket may be empty.
Hi, welcome to the Unnamed Podcast. This is Andrew.
It hasn't taken us
2 minutes to break in this podcast.
We're in the podcast, man.
All right, one last time. One last
time.
Time
out of water. God damn it.
One last time.
All right.
Hi, and welcome to the Onion Movie Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Damian.
Fuck you. You know, that's a good trade.
That's a good trade, guys. This is a podcast.
This is a podcast in which I have co-hosts who refuse to talk at any normal tone and therefore continue to break the podcast by being super quiet or super loud.
I broke the podcast! Yes!
Are you hoping that was super loud?
No.
Oh, okay. I was just seeing what your plan was at this point.
They are just being jerks. They're jerks.
So, for the purposes of discussion, are we going to be the wolf pack, or are we going to be all about bears, or have we chosen a spirit animal for this conversation to come? Damian is already willing to murder me for trying to do this.
This week, Andrew asked us to watch The Wolf of Wall Street.
Thank you, because I was worried for a second.
It is Martin Scorsese's latest entry into the film world.
My name is Jordan Belfort. The year I turned 26, I made $49 million, which really pissed me off because it was three shy of a million a week.
We're making a name for ourselves.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles. You know what a Fugazi is?
Fugazi.
And so. Andrew, since you were the one that made us watch this, what did you think of it? What is it about? Give us the lowdown.
I'd like to first, before we go there, to explain to Douglas, that is what we call a normal tone of voice.
Why was it so boring, though?
Anyways, Wolf of Wall Street. Now, this movie is Martin Scorsese's latest three-hour epic into explaining us that stockbrokers, stockbrokers are the worst people in the world. The movie is about Jordan Belfort, who is a...
Explaining us is a real thing.
I wasn't going anywhere.
Just move on.
I had moved on.
No, you weren't. You were laughing under your breath. I saw it on your face.
I was thinking stoker. I realized that's what I was thinking in my mind.
Stoke broker. All right, let's go. They're bad people.
The movie's about Jordan Belfort, a real individual who went to Wall Street in the 80s and basically became the worst person in the world in Wall Street, while at the same time becoming the richest man, which you could say are probably the same thing in the world.
Pretty sure Bernie Madoff is the worst.
Well, at the time. Let's say time. Alright, so Bernie Madoff was throwing it.
Madoff was doing it for a while, right? Pretty sure he started in the 80s as well.
Well, and he used to, I'm not, I don't know his story 100%, but I think what's even worse about Madoff is he was a regulator.
Yeah.
and then he retired, or actually, not retired isn't the right word. He left the regulators and then decided to do this thing that turned out to be, you know, stealing people's money, essentially.
So I'm going to preempt. I'm going to preempt what I'm about to say with this movie to say, first of all, I want us to go into spoilers with this movie, but we're going to hold off on spoilers for a little bit. We're going to talk about it in general, and then we'll go in, because I really want to talk about a lot of the last like half an hour of this movie. But this movie, as best I can describe it, is Goodfellas for the stock market. And I feel like, because I got that feeling so much of when you see Goodfellas and you hear him talk about he doesn't look at it as a business where he decided to do it and was good. He wanted to be that thing, right? And that's what drove him to make all of his choices in life to eventually become that crazy ending where it just went too far. And that's why I kind of put these movies together in my mind of Goodfellas and The Wolf of Wall Street. Because it wasn't about the fact that he was good at being a stockbroker. It was that he made a decision in his life that he wanted to be rich, right? He wanted to be that version. And whatever was going on in his life before this movie began, I assume the way it feels is that he just stopped that and said, to be rich, I must be stockbroker, and just went there and let it happen. And this movie is a fraternity. It is the douchebaggy of douchebaggiest people just letting them be the biggest assholes in the world and enjoying them being dirtbags and assholes for 3 hours, while at the same time coming to terms with the fact that not so much that you're siding with assholes, because I don't think at any time in this movie anyone is really going, yeah, he's the awesomest person in the world.
Damon is slowly raising his hand in agreement.
Is it because he had a Ferrari? Is that why? No, okay. it's the fact that it feels so much like Scorsese. I almost said Soderbergh. Scorsese is in between two worlds with this movie, where he's trying to be comedically entertaining with all of the craziness that happens between all these people, and at the same time just kind of revel in how bad these people are as people. And the weirdest thing about this movie is that I feel that it really finds it hard to kind of break those two things apart, or at the very same time allow you to break it apart when you're watching this movie. And I love it for that. And at the same time, I feel so much when I was watching this movie that it reveled way too much in the debauchery and didn't quite focus all enough on how horrible they are as people. And it's not so much that the movie needed to point and have someone say, other than the police who are investigating him, you know, you're a bad person. Because I think they have enough of it in this movie between the wife and basically every non-rich person in this movie. They kind of do a good job of going, this might not be the rightest of choices you can make in life when you're talking about making a living or whatnot. But maybe it's because it's so hard to separate the two actions, because it's all within the one person, and everyone that he pulled along with him were so much into that mentality that it became very hard for me to separate those two things when I'm watching this movie. And I guess the length hurt it too, because at some point in the movie, must have been like 2.5 hours in, I was like, I feel like I've seen this joke a lot, of them just being really horrible drug addicts and assholes and all sorts of things, that the joke just kept going. It was like, and it felt played on throughout the movie, so it was kind of hurting it for a little bit. But at the same time, it's an entertaining movie to no end. Do I think it is Scorsese's best movie? No, I don't think it is. Do I think it's DiCaprio's best movie? No, I don't think it is. But I also feel that this is a movie, more than a lot of Scorsese's latest movies, that would play very well when I look at it again in another year and just focus a bit more on not just the actual fun of how crazy these people get, but DiCaprio's little weirdness within the movie. Douglas, what do you think?
This movie, alright, I'm going to just lay it out in front. I'm going to lay it all out right now. I didn't think this movie was really that good. And what's interesting is, I actually wondered to myself how much I would have liked this movie if I hadn't seen American Hustle. Because for some reason, and I think it's mainly two things. One, the actual topics that it's touching on, you know, they're kind of similar with, you know, bringing down, you know, the whole legal aspect of it and bringing down these hot shots that are doing, you know, naughty things, as well as the fact that, you know, it tries to be a very comedic film. And so for some reason, as I watched this movie, I kept thinking to myself, Wolf of Wall Street is really nothing more than the much longer and not quite sure of itself poor man's version of American Hustle. That's what it felt to
me.
I
was thinking about a lot while watching it, and I don't know why. I don't know if I'd compare them to be one better than other comparison, but just to be like, but some reason it came up in my mind mainly because it's the same topic and the same kind of characters. Boiler Room.
Yeah, actually, I think I read somewhere that Boiler Room technically was about Jordan Belfort as well. But I'm not sure if maybe my memory is playing tricks on me. But as you said, it's the same sort of story. And the thing about this movie is, and you touched on it, it tries to show, you know, the rise and fall and how, you know, how much fun it was to rise and but at the same time how horrible a person, or at least how many bad things that this person is doing in order to get there, and then as he falls, you know, how that kind of goes awry. And he tries to do that a little bit seriously, but he also tries to be comedic a lot of the time with this movie. And this movie feels like, it's weird because Scorsese is such a mature, such a great filmmaker, but at the same time this movie doesn't feel like it knows what it's doing, right? It doesn't strike that balance between serious and comedy. It just feels like it's just off balance. It's just overweight somewhere, right? And you just don't know. You can't touch your finger on it, because there are times when I was laughing my ass off. You know, when you realize that cocaine is this guy's spinach, that's like hilarious. But then there are other times when you're just like, is this supposed to be a serious movie? And you're just not sure, right? And so you're kind of off kilter a lot of the time.
And at the same time,
that.
You have the narrator thing where we're getting the first person narration from Jordan Belfort, but at the same time, he's doing things like correcting the movie as it's going along. I think in an early point, we see the Ferrari, and it changes colors because he's like, no, it's not red, it's white.
And he even breaks the fourth wall at a couple of instances too. You know, he stops and turns and does the Frank Underwood sort of like, this is what's going on kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, as much as I want to like this movie, and I wouldn't say that I dislike this movie, right? I wouldn't go that far. I really can't say that this is, you know, as great as a lot of people out there are saying that it is. I would say, however, that it's clear that Jonah Hill really likes penises. Like, you know, this is
he
yet
had
another,
one in him in This Is The End.
And This Is The End, and now he has one. Well, he has one.
It'd be weird if he didn't.
But he shows, anyway.
Everyone knows about the dick joke in this movie.
Yeah. But, you know, I think two things. One, I don't think it's as good as everybody says it is. And two, as I said, I wonder what I would have thought of this movie if I hadn't watched American Hustle. If I didn't have that immediate or that movie that I watched so recently that was close enough for me to think about and to somehow grade it against. Because, you know, I watched it recently for a second time with Andrew and loved the movie even more. I'm talking about American Hustle here. And so in my mind, American Hustle is almost like, you know, the gold standard. And this just didn't live up to my expectations, and it didn't live up to the bar set by American Hustle. So I wonder if I didn't have that bar, if I just sat down and, you know, I said to myself, okay, this is Martin Scorsese, DiCaprio. DiCaprio is great in this movie, by the way.
Everybody's
great. Well, anyway, he does he does good in this movie.
You don't like the Rockles, do you?
The what?
The Rockles.
Sorry? That was a perfect moment.
Oh, sorry.
The Rockers are the guards.
Yeah, I just remembered now. What the hell is going on there?
Oh my goodness.
Baby. That look funny to you? Hmm. Like that, the eye there?
Why does his eye look different? Oh, hi, Rocco! And you see, that's the thing. There are gems just laid out all over the place in this movie. Just funny as hell moments. But when you put them all together and you stitch them with these sort of pseudo serious but not really, and you know, you don't really feel it. You're just gonna make me laugh at all the funny moments, aren't you? But oh. Yeah, I'm kinda sad that I didn't like this movie as much as I should have.
Me too. I mean, it's
I don't think
I would have even considered it at this point to be in my best of the year.
Oh, nowhere near. Yeah, and you said, I think you said a lot of like what I feel like, because this movie felt way over long. Like it could have lost a good half. Just play all the funny bits. Leave me alone. But yeah, Damien, what do you think of this movie?
Actually, I haven't seen this movie. No. I'm joking. Alright. How can I put this?
You like assholes.
You're both wrong. Not for the first time. Probably not for the last time. Alright. So I'll take you on a journey of how I saw this movie.
Okay.
Kind of to combat what Douglas said. I woke up in the morning and I watched Fargo. I love that movie because every time I watch it, I enjoy Steve Buscemi's character just a little bit more. Like I kind of love him and hate him just a bit more each time. And then I watch American Hustle for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I went, this movie is incredible. And then watch Wolf of Wall Street. And like, if I had to choose one or the other, I'd choose American Hustle, but there's not this great big gap. And I think the thing that I enjoy about the movie, that you guys, I guess, didn't pay as much attention to or enjoy as much, is the fact that, like Andrew brought it up, it's a giant fraternity. It is that movie. It is essentially Van Wilder, but with adults.
And a lot more money.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so from the movie begins until the movie ends, you just have this group of jackasses run by this ringleader, and all the decisions that they make and all the things that they do is in service of this just lunatic behavior. And I enjoyed watching them essentially play that out. And I didn't feel that this movie was... Oh, like, when I saw that the movie was 3 hours, at first, I'm like, alright, it is now 3 p.m. I'm going to be dead by the time that this movie ends. I don't care who's directing it. But I said, you know what, let me just watch. And 3 hours disappeared. It helps that when you have a lead like Leo, he, at this point, he can do everything. Like, you see, he's impossible not to like. You know he's a bad person. But you enjoy watching him make these bad decisions. You enjoy him being this ringleader. And you enjoy the speeches that he constantly gives. I enjoyed every single one of those speeches. I enjoyed all the dumb office parties that they had. I enjoyed all the interactions with his wife. Wives, plural. Both positive and negative. Just watching him go through the motions. The first time that the detectives come onto the boat, there was tears running down my face by the time they were leaving, when he was throwing lobsters at them. And so I'm like, this is the best movie I've ever... He's just the worst. And you just watch that play out, and I kind of suspected that you weren't going to like this movie a lot, but I kind of based that on the fact that you essentially work for Jamaican Wall Street. And so, no, you'd have had... No. He'd have had, like, more of an insight as to how those places work.
Not really. I would know if they were to speak technically, I could understand it. But the whole culture, trust me, I've been told, because I know people that, mm-hmm. that work over there, that, you know, it's... And the truth of the matter is, working on Wall Street in the 90s was different from working on Wall Street. No, yeah. And that whole
because they had the culture, collapse.
Because exactly, and plus, really, what this movie is about is not working on Wall Street. It is
exploiting
the after hours. It's the you know, the hookers and the cocaine and all of that, which may or may not be true depending on who you speak to. And please remember, this is an autobiography, right? And there are a lot of things in this movie where I look at it and I'm like,
I bet that
didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know?
But, no, the reason I say, I'm like, Douglas might be closer to this than I am. Like, I've only seen this world in movies. And so, Douglas might have some more insight and might frown on some of the tomfoolery that is taking place.
I also wonder how much of the cocaine and hookers thing we can plug into any profession if you throw the movie to the 80s.
Well,
Because that seems to just, if you put enough money into a profession in the 80s, it seems like that just happened.
I don't like doing this because I don't like passing on useless information to other people. But when Wall Street came out, Wall Street is what essentially turned Wall Street into Wall Street. Before that movie came out, none of that shit existed. Mm-hmm. There was like two assholes that everyone hated. Essentially, Canada's Wall Street, how Canada banking industry is now, where it's boring as all hell. That is what American banking industry was. And then this movie came out, all these children saw it and went, I want to be a stockbroker. These dirtbags became a stockbroker, and the dirtbaggery continued.
Let's be clear. They're not stockbrokers. Mm-hmm. They're not stockbrokers. They're coke brokers.
Yes.
Okay.
How is coke not on the dance deck? Alright, never mind. Probably because it's illegal, right? Probably. So, much like how I watch Van Wilder, like, this movie is entertaining. I'm going to watch this movie a lot.
And I think both me and Andrew give it because that. It is entertaining.
This movie is essentially, to me, it is Van Wilder, just with better directing, better acting, better story. But it has all the shenanigans mm-hmm. that Van Wilder has. And this movie actually has a real arc where this guy does terrible things, gets arrested, and then at the end realizes that, all right, still rich. All right, this world is still this world. I'm still rich, so who gives a shit? And so I enjoy, like, there's nothing about this movie that I don't like. I enjoy all the bit part characters. I enjoy just across the board. I enjoy the music. They had some choice pieces of music in this movie that just brought a smile to my face. I enjoy watching Matthew McConaughey in the movie for a hot 3 seconds.
Yeah.
The only cameo that I've seen for the whole of last year that I enjoy more than Matthew McConaughey is watching Louis C.K. be a police detective.
No.
In, like, every time I saw him on the screen,
there's a better one.
This is the best.
And I almost don't want to say it because it's a... Well, it's...
I can sleep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you watched Anchorman 2 yet?
Yeah.
So there's a guy where in a fight, he calls an airstrike.
All right.
That was the best.
Yeah,
that was the best.
most of the cameos in the fight scene at that point are amazing.
Yeah, I think that is it. I think it's because of the rapid amount of nonsense. But just watching Louis C.K.
Like, oh yeah, that was great too.
Just
that was
watching fantastic. Him. Like, oh god, this is so good.
I think all of that movie just works so well, and it's this huge farce, and yes. It's just so great.
But here,
oh
like,
my god!
But here, like,
I
here
really
is.
Like Wolf of like that movie is straight up and down a 4. I'll watch this. I'll watch Wolf of Wall Street far more.
I definitely want to watch it again to see if the American Hustle effect occurs, because I liked American Hustle the first time. I definitely liked it more than I like this movie. But my like for American Hustle turned into intensified love. Like, that is now so good to me. And I want to see if I can watch Wolf of Wall Street again, if I can get past the fact that it's a little bit long. You know, if I can get past essentially not necessarily not caring, but get past watching those in-between bits. The bits in between the funny stuff. In between the ridiculous stuff. That you and I clearly both love. Right?
Know.
But
like, you say that there's bits in between. But I'm thinking and I'm not sure.
I'm curious to think about this. Like, about. As an idea of films, American Hustle versus Wolf of Wall Street. The thing about it is that with Wolf of Wall Street, both of them have their entertaining bits and have their moments in between them. The thing about it, with Wolf of Wall Street, the moments in between them are moments which are supposed to be seriously dark and kind of, in a way, make us feel bad about the world.
Mm-hmm.
American Hustle, while talking about things in politics and such, they still remain in the world of deception, in con artist world.
Mm-hmm.
And con artist movies are always entertaining movies. Why? Because they are at their core trying to distract us from whatever dark shit is happening. Wolf of Wall Street isn't. Right? When we watch Wolf of Wall Street and we move from the opening section with Matthew McConaughey, and Matthew McConaughey tells us he needs to take all of these drugs to stay alive, and we're living in a world where we know, as people who are thinking about the working world, we know it's about commissions for these people, but at the same time, just like Belfort asks, like, but if we can make them money at the same time, isn't that advantageous to everyone else? Like, once we move past that point of understanding, no, we don't give a shit about their money, we want ours, right? To the next moment of him going to the penny sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is not a moment of distraction or, like, entertainment. It's just a moment which exists of darkness. And it doesn't really have that value, right? It's something which is about the world, which is just sad, as opposed to American Hustle, where everything is live and let die.
The thing that I like about this movie is that they're not trying to teach you jack shit. There's no lesson to be learned. There's nothing to be had. There's nothing deeper than what is on the surface. This dude is a terrible dude. He did terrible things. And this is what happened.
I think that's more about the fact that, as Douglas said, this is a self-biography. And it's not so much that anyone's trying to teach us anything as much as he didn't learn anything.
And so, and that is, like, just watching him and watching Scorsese enjoy. Because you can tell everyone on this movie enjoyed themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone had a good time with this movie. Mm-hmm. It feels.
Rob Reiner looks like you.
It Rob feels.
Reiner. Oh my.
It feels
we want
like
you to be really angry and then pick up the phone and not be angry.
And you just watch, yeah, this, like, he's a bad dude and he did dumb things and got away with it for a while. But everyone knows this story. Like, everyone who is going to watch this movie
mm-hmm.
knows, like, this isn't the first time this story has been told on film. This is not the first time you've heard this story. We just had a big banking crisis where people flew too close to the sun and dreamt of madness. And the whole world came tumbling down. But if they were going to...
I'm sorry, I don't understand these analogies if they're not in movie analogies.
Whatever.
I don't understand the real
and
world.
So if they are going to, you know, make a movie and have it be serious, we'd have ended up with another Margin Call. But this movie is
no,
so much better than Margin
fair.
Call.
That's not fair, because Margin Call is a mediocre movie. mediocre people.
Right.
So if you take, so if you take, if you, do, if you take,
you airlift a better,
master,
right?
Like
better
Scorsese
directors
and yeah,
better
yeah,
actors. If you drop them in there, you'd get that movie with more polish, but it would still be that movie. I don't want that. I just want to see this guy be a dirtbag, and I thought after 3 hours I'd have been intensely tired of watching him do this. But even at the very end scene, when the movie ends, I'm like, I want to see more of this. I want to see more. No. Roll back up these credits. Let me see what he does. Because we've all seen those infomercials. They're on the internet nonstop.
That was funny. I like that.
Holy shit. I wanted to see. I just wanted to. Let's continue. I want to see the rest of this lunatic's life.
I actually thought that was going to be a moment where the movie reminds us this is a real person. Like, they would have.
Yeah,
put
I thought it was a
real
guy going there. Yeah, me too. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, this movie is entertaining. It is 100% from start to finish. I enjoy, like, the use of language. Just them being filthy all the time for no reason, just watching these great actors just be scumbags. And like, there's nothing like the bad hairdos and just on and on and on,
the phosphorescent teeth.
Yep. God, I love this movie. The
so,
rockers,
right.
I love it.
Can
I love
we
it
start coming up with ideas for what the next joke will be for Jonah Hill? Because with Django Unchained, it was they mentioned spaghetti,
mm-hmm,
and he said I'm on board.
Mm-hmm.
What's the joke for this one? Can we
cocaine?
Can we cocaine?
Right, for him to lose weight. Everybody knows that. So he lost all that weight. Cocaine.
All right.
That and vigorous masturbation.
Yep. And the aunt. Oh, guys, the aunt. God damn it. The inner. The, is he hitting on me?
Yeah.
She hit it on me. I'm like, ah, this movie's the best. Fuck, I love this movie.
So, okay, unless you guys have anything else to say, like, alright.
This
so
movie's great.
I want to talk about the last half an hour of this movie.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
if you haven't seen this movie, and you care, close your, say La 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 and close, plug your ears for a while.
Andrew, love our timestamp. That you can jump to.
Yeah, you can jump to the next timestamp. Everyone came into a discussion about this movie over Christmas when it was released, about the idea that, and I talked about this a little bit a couple weeks ago when we discussed This Is England, that the movie itself doesn't necessarily give a judgment on,
mm-hmm,
Jordan Belfort as a character. Because he literally, as Damien says, and the last scene in this movie is not just after he's arrested and goes to jail and he talks about being terrified and thinking he's going to, the worst things in the world are going to happen to him. But he ends up saying, as Damon says, oh wait, I'm rich.
Yeah, dog.
And,
yeah,
you
and
find
they pan out,
out
and
you
see him playing tennis.
Right?
Yeah.
He's fine.
Oh, dog,
but they
rich
go a step further,
yeah,
to show us after he's left prison. And he's, once again, rich and perfectly fine, in which he gives speeches. He
seminars.
Gives seminars talking about salesmanship.
I've
and
got
have
so many times to go to, like, they have them out here.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to go to one. But I know that there will be security and they're going to throw me out. Because believe me, Douglas, I would ruin everything. Going there and be the worst person. I want to, but I don't want security.
And he's reminding us of that moment earlier in the movie, you know, selling his pen. And what the movie is basically doing at that point is not... Because I feel that the movie sufficiently reminds us what we're supposed to be feeling about these characters, while at the same time entertaining the fuck out of us.
Mm-hmm.
At least me. Not so much.
Are
you
sad
too.
You weren't in the movie? Like, you weren't a part of this fraternity? You weren't giving the wolf
God,
sounds and shit?
It seems so much fun.
But I feel that the movie, more than that, skipping past that point, is reminding us how horrible the world is, that it allows this, we live in a system that allows for this sort of behavior to be okay, and if you're willing to go through these steps, you will come out in the plus ranking of life. In that, because most movies, like I put this akin to Goodfellas, and when Goodfellas ends, we have that moment where we see him at his house and he's miserable. Right, so we kind of take that misery as a reminder that while he was he made it out relatively unscathed. His life is misery, right? When we see Jordan Belfort at the end of the movie, there is no misery in him, right? I mean, maybe you could have half a second where he's fighting with his ex-wife now for to see his child, but I'm pretty sure that he's enough an asshole for us not to care, and him not to care. So, as a thing for the movie to do, it felt very weird and very, very interesting as an outlook on life. Mainly because you understand this is Jordan Belfort's story told by Jordan Belfort. So are we supposed to kind of superimpose our own understanding of what we imagine his misery is that he doesn't quite understand himself? Or do we just take it as the world is a shithole and he still is okay? Why is that okay in the world?
I think Douglas should go first.
I don't know,
going to be depressing.
Wow. I watched, you look at the end of this movie, and as you said, you know, he's still giving speeches, he's, you
still
know,
rich,
exactly,
still cunning people.
You know, it's not like people are running him down, trying to arrest him again, because he shouldn't be, you know, speaking about how he stole everybody's money, and I can't, you kind of look at that, and there's as you said, an innate, or an implied sadness, or judgment almost on us all to say, you know, how can this happen, you know, how can this guy steal all the money and just come out on the other side and be like, hey bitches, I'm still rich, and not only am I still rich, but I can still con you guys into paying me money to do things and then get even more rich, even richer. And I think for me, that's, I don't know. I look at the end of this. I think that's all I really see at the end of the movie. But at the same time, as I said, I wonder what the story really is. Because it's an autobiography, or it's at least based on an autobiography. I don't know how much got changed or lost in translation between the book and the actual movie. I don't know if Belfort had anything to do with the movie, if Scorsese just told him to fuck off and I'm going to actually tell the real story or whatever. But you know, there are scenes.
Belfort saw the movie and said, guess what guys, I'm still rich.
And I'm about to get richer.
Yes.
But
peace out.
But scenes like the one where he gives a speech in his brokerage firm, when he's about to make a big deal with the SEC, he's about to essentially get off scot-free, and the only thing he has to do is to just never trade stocks, or at least never trade stocks for other people in his life, and he will get to keep all of his billions of dollars.
Like, you know what?
And he essentially says, you know what, I am tied to this firm, I feel this sort of love for the firm that I built, and I'm going to give the biggest middle finger to everybody else who thinks that I can't just stay and do this. And like, a moment like that is so, I've got like two sort of views of it. One, it's so sentimental, it's so almost the opposite of what we've seen him so far. It feels to me like an embellishment of what really happened. It seems to me like, you know, that's something that somebody says he did when he tried to get a deal from the SEC, but they said that he couldn't.
Right?
But on the other side of things, I could also, this guy, at least the way he's portrayed in the movies, is this hugely kind of narcissistic, ego fueled guy that actually, if you think about it, you could see him doing that. Right? You could see that type of a person
going,
you know what?
I'll beat this.
Yeah.
Superman.
And I think maybe that's another thing that sort of has me a little off kilter with this movie, where I'm not sure if I should believe what I'm seeing. I'm not sure even if, when I don't believe, if maybe I should be believing. And that's something I think I need to kind of get used to, or I need to watch it again to kind of solidify what do I feel about this movie. But I don't know, Andrew. I just kind of see the end. I know I kind of got into this whole other argument because it's something I wanted to talk about but didn't, because that is, I think, a little bit spoilerific. But yeah, I only really see I see two things. On the surface, it's very positive to him, and if you go a little bit deeper, you've got that sort of finger point or finger wagging going on, where you're like, really, guys, you allowed this man to get away with this kind of thing.
All right. The end is where this movie, like, it went from being a movie that I like a lot to a movie that I absolutely love. Because all of these movies end with, if you do bad shit, you'll have to pay in the end. All of them.
And because he didn't pay.
All of them ends up. But as we all know, especially having watched the best movie of last year, we know that that is not how the world works.
What's the best movie of last year?
Act of Killing. We now know. Like, I had always known that the world doesn't work like that. But it was interesting introducing that movie to people and watching people kind of have to accept the fact that, oh yeah, the world doesn't work like that at all at any point in history. Never ever has. Oh, the good guys always win. Doesn't work like that. Whoever wins gets to tell the story. That is how history works. And so as long as you've won, it doesn't matter what you've done. You dictate what good and bad is. America is good because they killed all the Indians who weren't actually Indians. Right? They're not actually. They came to America, said, hey guys, are you Indians? They said,
no, yeah,
no, we're not. And they murdered all of them. And this, it's been what, 500 years? They still call them Indians, which is holy shit. Talk about winning. Right? And then after that, they're like, slavery, 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 and maybe we'll stop. They're like, alright, since we've done with slavery, maybe women's rights too, we should ease up on that a little. Not enough though. Like, we will still want to keep them in check, but let's. And then you go, alright, that is just America, maybe that's a bad example. And then you go, alright, let's do this country by country. Britain, nope, they're all dicks. Europe, nope, they're all dicks. Russia, right now, is invading another country. For no fucking reason. Because Putin is a giant asshole, and has been, and will die a hero in that country. Despite the whole world going, this guy's a real asshole. But he won. Like, the world will remember him as the leader of Russia. And that is all he'll be remembered for. Right? When you flip through, when you Google Putin, he said, Russian leader. That's what he won't say. And killer of zillions of people. And then when you look at money, you go, oh yeah, this is how money works too. If you're rich enough, you can get out anything. If I shoot Andrew in the face, I'll never see daylight again. If I am rich enough, I won't. If I am rich enough and I rob everybody in the country, I'll be out in 3 years. It doesn't matter how many people's life I actually ruin by taking their money. That is not important. What is important is that at some point I was rich. And so I get to dictate my terms. And so at the end of the movie, when they're like, oh yeah, I realized something at the end of this. I'm still fucking rich. Like, yeah! Thank you, Scorsese, for reminding everybody that this is how the world actually works. If you're rich and you do bad shit, as long as you haven't shot someone in the face, and sometimes even if you do shoot somebody in the face, see OJ Simpson, you get to walk away from it, because that's how the world works.
So okay, I'm going to ask a really dumb question, right? And I'm going to pose the newsroom question, right? Which is, yes, we have decided that this is how the world works as a structure. This is how the world works as a structure. And while we feel it is bad, it's how it works. So, are we therefore hoping that eventually as a people, as a society, as a world, we will change the system? Once again, remember I started with, I'm going to ask a dumb
question. All right, hold on. I'm going to answer that question by just letting you know what's going on here. Damian is not saying that the system needs to get changed. Mm-hmm. Here is what Damian took from this movie. This movie is a 3-hour instructional guide to one Damian White as to how to live his life.
Except for the cookie.
Yeah, yeah, but in terms of do bad things, get rich, and be willing
and
to face the very tiny consequence of going
as long
to...
As you're not violent.
Yeah.
So you're with the queen. So, of course. By the way, that, I haven't talked about it, but that we mentioned spinach cocaine.
Yeah.
But that whole section with quaaludes,
it's great.
The lemons.
Yeah.
So I totally made it home to the reality part happening and spinach cocaine. Probably the greatest 10-minute stretch that Scorsese has ever given me.
I made it home. Not a scratch. No, you didn't, Doc.
Andrew, like...
Because here's the thing, right? Movies as a thing, and every piece of art that you watch or consume at some point in time has some form of perspective and is reminding us of something in this world. It's not just for the sake of saying this is a fact, but we move past the fact mode to say, okay, that is the reality, and we want utopia, even though we can never get there. You know, it's like math. We want to get as close as possible. We want to feel like we're progressing to it. So the fact is reminding us so that we can step forward in some way. I have that feeling about art and movies and anything. So he has reminded us of a fact, which is the instructional guide to Damian's life. Mm-hmm. Are we there, and Act of Killing does the very same thing. Are we therefore saying that this is a reminder to, and the positive that we want to take away from this is we can hope to move in this direction towards something better? And it's a system change he wants?
No, I think he just held up a mirror. He's like, dog, this is how the world works. This is how it works.
Or is it Scorsese saying, Belfort, look at yourself. You're kind of...
No, he's just showing the world, hey guys, this is what happens. This is how it happens. Like, I don't understand why when people say like romance movies, right? A lot of people will be quick to go, yeah, that only works in movies, though. Like running down people in the rain and catching them in airports.
Yeah.
That's movie shit. Mm-hmm. And like revenge movies. Anyway. Yeah, you could try and take on like 6 guys in their home turf, but you'd be shot in like a second. And this movie, they're like, because it didn't end how movies are supposed to end, I guess people got up in arms, but I don't understand.
I don't understand how
that makes sense.
There are a lot
this
of people who watched this movie and said, how dare Scorsese not show that there are like consequences.
He did that in the Departed.
Yeah, yeah. They did. Like, I've read a lot of people talk about how, you know, this movie is really bad because it glamorizes it, makes him into a, or they think it makes Belfort into a hero, which... I don't think it does.
Yeah,
you know?
It doesn't.
No. The movie
doesn't. If you're a scumbag, you'll see this as instructional.
Yeah.
If you're a normal person that follows the rule of law, you'll go,
well, no,
you
I
probably
can,
shouldn't do
I
this.
I can see.
A bad idea.
No, hold on. I can see where somebody can make that argument because they're not looking below the surface. Because on the surface, right, this is a really funny movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes these horrible things that he does, you know, into jokes, and then at the end of it, he runs off into the sunset, and he makes another big joke about it.
Right.
But as we say, you know, you look at it, and essentially, Scorsese is putting up the mirror that you spoke about and showing people, listen, is this really how you want this to play out? I think what those people who said that aren't getting from this movie is that final question, which is this really what you think
you
should happen? Or should we change
like
this?
The movie's fun as shit. And if you take away that this is an instructional, you might want to seek help. Like
and
real
and
help.
The people who do that are the same people you were talking about who watch Don Johnson are like, yeah, I should do that. So that's like, I get Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
I'm a nice car.
This will work.
And the sad part about it, probably will. But if that's what you want, if all you want out of life is lots of money, go forth, young sir. Or young woman.
Be a stockbroker.
Young sir. And be a jerk.
A stoker broker.
Strucker. Alright. This movie is incredible, and you guys are wrong. Stop talking dumb shit about Scorsese. He is a national treasure, despite him being like 3 foot tall. I wish they threw him. I just want a blooper of them throwing him at the dirt.
Midgets,
make it happen.
They have to stop thinking of midgets of people. They have to think of it as adults.
God damn it. How are you guys? All you guys have done this entire time is laugh at this movie.
But that's the thing. It's
all
the times when you didn't have to laugh.
Right?
That
when were those times? When?
Don't you ever talk that way to me. Never! What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it.
So this past week, not just a Scorsese fest in my lifetime, but I got Douglas to watch another classic film this week. And this week, Douglas, for the very first time, got to sit down and watch Cool Hand Luke.
Oh, okay.
Douglas was cringing. Why, Douglas?
Yeah, I thought he was talking about another one. But when he said the first time, I realized it wasn't the one that I thought he was going to tell
me. You mean the one we just watched?
Yep.
No, I wasn't going to talk about that. I'll do you about that enough later.
Yeah.
So, Cool Hand Luke, you've never seen it before. Tell us what you thought.
I like Steve McQueen. This is a Steve McQueen movie without Steve McQueen. I love this movie. Nope. this movie is pretty good. It is, the Steve McQueen sort of comparison. This movie is very much like another movie that I love with Steve McQueen in it, which is Papillon,
which I haven't seen,
which you should see because it's great. Have you watched this movie, Damien?
Yes, I've seen both.
Based
on your recommendation for Papillon.
Yes, sir. So this movie, I shouldn't even really describe it, but Paul Newman, he... By the way, right?
All
right. By the way.
All right.
Please, somebody explain to me how public... I mean, I understand, right? Destroying public property is not a good thing. Please explain to me how you go to big boy prison for like 3 years. I think he got a 3-year sentence. 2 years. 2 years in big boy prison.
Well, you know,
for breaking
days,
a few poles.
Only big boy prisons.
like that to me seemed a little excessive.
And he was drunk, so let's get this clear. He was drunk.
Wow.
That makes it worse.
Yeah, it makes it worse. Shut up.
They didn't have any fences though.
Yes, they did.
So they didn't count as big boy prison. Yeah. They just had lots of guns to shoot you if you ran.
And fences. So that was the first thing, but I was fine with that because, you know, in all movies you have to kind of accept the setup and then try and deal with how the movie progresses from there. And this movie is just it's great. You know, Cool Hand Luke is just, he's just the cool guy. He is the quintessential 1960s/50s cool dude. You know, he's the guy that you see and you're like, girls will flock to this person, and you know, men will love him and bring him up, and you know, so that was just, that's always for me, especially in the older movies, because it's, I think, much more of a thing then, and they like to play on that. For me, I like to watch movies like that, so that was an immediate tick in the Douglas will like this movie box. Then now you have a lot of shenanigans, and I'm a big shenanigan kind of guy, right? You know, when you have a prison movie.
Like
yeah. You know, like, but you know, when you have a prison movie about, you know, a guy that goes to a really hardcore prison where every day he spends out in a chain gang doing some sort of road work, and somehow they are able to fit in that he bets that he can and does eat something like 50 eggs in an hour. Like, what?
More importantly, why?
Well, more exactly. And guess what? There is no reason, right? It's just because he's not lazy, he's bored and he needed something to do with his time. And you know, I think that's kind of what this movie is all about. This guy, he clearly has, there's some issues that we never find out about, but the way he deals with them is like, he's like, you know what, fuck it, let me do something else.
I want to watch that prison movie, even though I think hunger might be it. Uh-huh. I want to watch that prison movie where they explain to us that it's not just the fact that you're in prison, it's that you're really fucking bored because there's nothing you can do. Is Hunger that movie? Because I haven't really watched Hunger since it came out.
No, Hunger is like, they focus on the mistreatment of the prisoners up front, and then the rest of that movie is them trying to make a statement by not eating. Them being bored doesn't come up a single time in that movie. That movie's gross. So good though.
Everyone can watch it.
Down by Law is
Done by Law. Like, okay. I wanted to watch that. That's the one with thing there, right?
That's the one we watched.
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking of something right. Completely different.
When
yeah.
we even spoke about it, when you saw like how the time progressed while they were in prison, and you could see that they physically look worse, the cell look worse, and you get like, if you sit in a cell all day.
Yeah, you have
bored
to. Right, you have to come up with something to do.
It's like Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
Why are you so good at flicking the cards in the hat?
Time.
Doing this every day. Zillion. Terrific.
But yes, Andrew, I adore this movie, and thank you for making me watch it.
Last week, with a discussion topic that Damien was very angry at, talking about women in movies.
I remember now.
Yeah.
Women in movies.
I was asking what your favorite film directed by a woman was. Right?
The Little Mermaid.
And the internet responded.
So cool!
Actually, thank you. Anyway.
So cool!
Anna Long.
That's not a director.
In Toronto, responded with recently, enough said, overall Lost in Translation.
Alright,
Neil Morgan, at Immortal Critic, responded with a very Damien like response.
Mm-hmm.
ZD30.
CD30.
at All Flickoff mentioned a film I've never seen, Lena Wertmuller's Seven Beauties from 1975.
Because we're sexist beats.
Alex Kittle responded with something that Damien is very familiar with, Clueless.
You're a bad person.
Wow.
You've seen it a lot, haven't you?
So many times.
That's what I thought. Right, so be quiet.
God. That wasn't by choice.
I know.
When I was a child.
You had no choice.
Had no choice.
Right.
Then I bought Arklos.
You got choice.
Rectified all that shit.
At Seluj, I don't know how to pronounce that name.
It's not our new version.
responded with Deepa Mehta's Water, which I've never heard of or seen. It sounds Indian.
Stop making up movies. Stop it.
Shane at Film Actually responded with Salaam Bombay. Never seen it. I've heard of it. The
one is just. Are you hearing? Like, do you recognize any of this? We ever heard of this?
We've lost Douglas from Lost in Translation.
Oh,
that's the last point.
Mm-hmm.
Amir
brought us back again with Lost in Translation. Nathaniel Rogers gave me a list of the piano, Cleo from 5 to 7, and Beau Travail.
Apparently, Cleo from 5 to 7 is awesome. I was listening to some podcast somewhere
recently.
Yeah,
I've heard good things about it.
And it sounds really cool.
Peter Labuzzo from the Cinephiliacs podcast, Damien's favorite responder, came up with Jean Demiel.
Oh, I like this. This
right.
is incredible.
Let us hear Andrew speak the Francais.
Let me try this again. Let
yes,
try
let's
this
go.
Again.
The Francais.
No. Andrew
Gina,
says Francais.
No, Francais.
Gina Dielman? Dielman. Dielman.
Sure. That's good.
Daisies. Mikey and Nikki. Beau Travail again, and The Headless Woman, which are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 movies I've never heard of.
I think I've seen The Headless Woman.
You've seen The Headless Woman? So see, people aren't making up names.
At least I've heard of it.
Tony Thanos responded with ZD30, once again giving Damien response to
the
fact that
it's not a contest anymore. She's the best. Stop making up movies.
Stop. Once again, Philip Concanon brought up Gene Dielman, also great, mentioning Wanda, Meeks Cut Off, Cleo 5 to 7, The Father of My Children, The Apple, and Portrait of Jason.
Can you like compile that in a list and send it to me?
So you can check.
Yeah, so that I can watch some of these movies.
Stop
being a sexist piece.
Kyle Turner brought up Daisies, another movie that's been mentioned recently. Nick Preach brings up Zero Dark Thirty, Eve's Bio.
Oh, that's what ZD30 is.
Are you serious, Douglas?
I was
Douglas,
the
are you
whole
serious?
Time. I'm like, what
You're
is
like,
that
what
movie?
Is happening?
What are they talking about? Is it about some sort of like robot that
are you
was
high?
Called ZD? Like, is it C-3PO's cousin? I don't know. Like, this whole time.
CP30.
I'm never doing this podcast again.
Nick Fridge brought up, as I said, Zero Dark Thirty, East Bio, Clueless, and Sophia's. I'm guessing
yeah,
he's talking about Sofia Coppola's entire overall.
Guys, Clueless is funny once.
Bubba Wheat from Flights, Tights, and Movie Nights brought up Clueless. since you
guys,
you
stop
see.
It. It's not good.
And the last response comes, my favorite of the lot, is another list, which comes from the frequent responder, Rand McNeil from The Matinee. Yeah. And
I saw his list was and was happy with it.
He mentions a lot of movies, but I'm just going to mention the ones that I haven't talked about so far. The Hurt Locker, Meeks Cut Off, Rat Catcher, Take This Waltz, and the one that I kind of applauded him for mentioning, because I'm feeling more and more like in the last couple of years it's not getting talked about anymore, it's Lena Ramsey's We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Yep. When I saw that list and I saw that one, I was like, how is that not my number one? Like,
so,
yeah.
Now I have my number two, so still not ZD. That's definitely, that's two. The movie's incredible.
I've been hearing, lots of people have been recommending Ratcatcher to me in the last couple of years, and I still haven't watched it. I need to check that out.
There's a joke out of it, but it's not going to be a good joke.
It's
going to be very sexist,
what's,
and I can't
what's
do that.
Going
nope.
to be?
Nope.
Come on, go ahead.
Nope.
Share.
Mm-mm.
Share.
Mm-mm. We have to respect women. At least try. Don't want to get stabbed.
So as I mentioned, we're talking about Scorsese as much as we're doing this podcast. I kind of wanted to do something I did a while back with Ridley Scott, talking about his two most revered films and deciding to kind of let the internet decide which deserves to live and which deserves to die. And it's not so much saying that one is that any of them are bad. It's so much as having to make a Sophie's choice, right? And I'm curious, if we throw it to the internet, asking them Taxi Driver or Goodfellas, which of those two, considering the fact that whichever movie you pick, the other one would be scrubbed from existence, which movie would you prefer to
there
exist
is
in this world?
No contest.
I know
contest.
Your response, but
no
I want
contest.
To know the internet's response.
No
Taxi
contest.
Driver wins. Everyone.
Fuck you. Goodfellas. Goodfellas. By the way, we have a discussion to have today about Taxi Driver. But no, Goodfellas for the win
that
every time. Awesome. Every time.
I don't know what he's talking about. Taxi Driver gets 2 votes. I'm infinitely impressed. It's not even a question. And I love Taxi Driver.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fooks, gonna get a big dish of beef chow mein.
Along with the films, there was also the advent of television, 1948-49, and the heyday of really the best, some of the best programming in American television, in the history of American television up to this point, with the 50s, 1950s. And so I saw a lot of television shows, but also films on television. Being working class family, too, they didn't have enough money to go to the theater, so theater wasn't an option. Live stage shows. So it was mainly visual literacy was happening at that time to me. I did not understand that was happening. What it made me realize was that there was an intelligence, another kind of intelligence, that was trying to tell a story through where the director, the writer, and the cinematographer, where they were focusing your eyes. You know, whether it was the camera may be on an extremely low angle, looking up at you. The use of the lens, the size of the lens. I began to understand certain lenses did interpreted the story differently. A longer lens crushed everything together and made it flat. A wider lens stretched everything and sometimes distorted it, especially if camera movement. I learned looking at certain pictures, particularly Welles' films and William Wyler, too, a wide-angle lens. Wyler used his wide-angle lens in a very strong, steady image. But Wells used that wide-angle lens, 18 millimeter, it turns out, very often, to move along the walls, move along. And you really felt, I felt as if the camera was flying, as if the story was flying by, you know. I didn't know why until I kept seeing the films again and again. And as I began to know a little more about what filmmaking was like and what cameras did, and that's, I still didn't know who made the pictures, you know. But I was beginning to understand that... there are certain tools you use, and those tools become part of a vocabulary that's just as valid as that vocabulary that is used in literature. And I like
it. So this week in our top five, since we're talking about The Wolf of Wall Street and also Scorsese, I wanted us, with Scorsese being one of our favorite filmmakers and having so much work for us to look at, to talk about not just his best films, but what we consider to be our top five favorite scenes of the Scorsese's filmography. Douglas, do you want to start this one?
Sure. And I love that I'm starting, because then I get to say this one. Because I'm sure this is on all of our lists. But Goodfellas is a great movie.
No, it isn't.
Joe Pesci is fucking fantastic. And in this movie, there is a scene...
I'm pretty sure you and I don't have the same Goodfellas scene.
Oh, really? Okay. But in this movie, there is a scene where... Henry's telling a story, and it's a really funny story, and Joe Pesci takes exception, right? And you know, it's the movie that spawned, you know, Joe Pesci just goes crazy and he's like, do you think I'm funny? Am I funny to you? Am I a clown? And that scene is just, it's perfect. It's perfect because not only is it great, not only you know, is Joe Pesci amazing, but also I am now realizing now that person, Joe Pesci, is sitting right beside me. That is one Damian White. That is something that Damian would do.
Just to mess with people.
It's great. And you find out at the end, oh wait, no, he's actually fine.
You are a clown.
I'm feeling tonight, though.
Oh, I love that movie.
You truly have.
And I love that scene.
You'll burn in hell for this. Gotta make sure of it.
There's this movie called Shutter Island. And Rorschach is in Shutter Island. Okay, sure. And Leo meets Rorschach at some point. And Jackie O'Haley has lost his goddamn mind. And then you get to watch two just incredible actors play off each other. One trying to remind the other that, dog, you're crazy as all get out. And just watching the interaction between them was just, like, it was just incredible. Like, every time I've seen that movie, every time it gets to that point, that is like the only scene that I'll pull up and watch again. I mean, now I have to see this again. These guys are, and I love it. And I love, like, I don't want to say only Scorsese could get that done, because that's a little bit too much hyperbole, but it is definitely, it is my second favorite scene from this movie, but I know that my absolute favorite scene is probably going to be taken by one of you guys. So.
I think it's very improbable, because, like, we have a lot to go through. I'm actually going to be picking a lot of visual scenes from Scorsese. And I'm going to start with one of his more recent films, and that is Hugo. I recently revisited the film. It's a very short scene, and I don't think it's the one you guys are picking from, because it's not
the wizard?
As key. No. It's a very tiny moment, and I realized it upon rewatching the film. And it is one of the earlier times when Chloe Moretz and the child playing Hugo Cabaret are together. And it's what I call the stampede sequence, where they kind of break away from one another in the train station while a big crowd is going through. Obviously, so a train has just come in. And what Scorsese has done, and I think it's kind of brilliant, because obviously since he's discussing the silent era of cinema within this film, is that he has this one tiny moment within this movie where we focus on Chloe Moretz's face because she's fallen down on the ground, and he does what people used to do in the silent era, which is instead of having kind of a 1-2 shot of her face looking up and then the feet looking down, he kind of superimposes the two on one another in the film. And I don't think it's something that I recognized when I first saw the film a few years back, but it just kind of struck me as amazing. And while we can talk about all of the reveal scenes in Hugo as being great, because they are, that moment kind of got me this time with rewatching that movie. And yeah, Hugo is great.
So Hugo is great.
Yeah.
And my next pick for my fourth favorite scene should probably be higher up. Anyway, especially since this one is going to try and take it from me, I'm going to take it quickly. So, as you said, this movie is about, you know, film, silent cinema, that kind of stuff. There's a moment in this movie where we kind of go back in time and we see a filmmaker and his studio and just, you know, him creating crazy scenes, you know, underwater. You're welcome. Vikings, all sorts of different scenarios are going on, and it's so visual, it's so beautiful, and you kind of see you see what it's supposed to look like, and you see how they make it look like what it's supposed to look like, and it's just it's wonderful. It's a wonderful look back at, you know, where I guess visual effects came from, and it's a wonderful look at how you can trick the eye into thinking it's seeing something when it probably really isn't, and it's just a beautiful palette of colors and you know, funny looking people in weird outfits. It's just great. I love that.
It's incredible. Absolutely incredible. Probably the best thing he's ever directed.
Yep.
You jackass. So thanks for that.
You're welcome.
Scumbag. Andrew's favorite movie of all time, The Departed. There's a scene where a young man is being initiated into a group of terrible people. And there's a problem with his hand. At least, by the end of it, there's a problem with his hand. And you get to be reminded that Jack Nicholson is a terrible person.
Nicholson.
Phil Mickelson. Webber. And I enjoy that scene because it is, hey, what if we made Goodfellas? We just fast forwarded into 2000s. What if we did that? And you saw it and you went, he still got it. You can still make this type of movie. And it just brought a smile to my face because it felt like all of those movies, all of him was being put in this scene. And you just watch it play out and you go, I've seen him do this multiple times. And it doesn't diminish. There's nothing about it that still doesn't strike me. And I enjoy that scene. And that might be the only thing that movie does better than the original movie.
Jack Nicholson?
That scene.
My number four is... this got mixed up somewhere. Is from a lesser loved Scorsese film. And I don't know if you guys have seen this movie yet, but it's Bringing Out the Dead. And it's like, the thing about that movie is that it kind of plays like an after hours kind of movie where it feels very, very much like it's set up to set up and just moment to moment, as Nicolas Cage is the main character, but he kind of goes from one partner to another like every 15 or 20 minutes within the movie. And there's this one scene which I adore with Ving Rhames, where he comes to a party and there's an individual who has supposedly overdosed on drugs, and these two individuals, once recognizing the fact that the guy is going to be okay, decides, instead of just fixing the problem, getting up and going, to turn this into a bit of a circus and using it as a moment to scare all the people around him into hopefully never taking drugs again in their life, and make it into a bit of a revival moment. And I adore that scene. I like Bringing Out the Dead a lot. You watch it, Damon? I don't know if this hasn't. You should watch
that
movie. So I hear.
Okay.
It's from a director that I kind
of like. Exactly. Right?
What's his name again? Martin Scorsese?
I don't think so.
No, okay.
So there's a movie that we watched for this podcast, and I think the general consensus was that it wasn't really that good. It was called New York Stories.
Yep.
It had three parts to it, directed by three different people, three different stories, three different casts, everything.
One was watchable.
One was exactly. I actually think one was great.
In a cannon and fired into the sun.
I think one was great, and that was the one directed by one Martin Scorsese. And there is a scene where you see Nick Nolte painting this huge mural. And it's really... I don't think it's that long. It's kind of akin to what he did in Hugo with the theater. And again, it's because of the visual, and not necessarily, well, with Hugo there was both the art side of it, but also the way that he was filming it made it look superb. With this one, it was more just what we were looking at. And that was this painting and how it had evolved over the time from what appeared to be like, you know, just dark, brownish, blackish colors. And then as you see Nick Nolte, who, by the way, like, I've never seen him act that awesome in his life. Except
is
for...
to say you've never seen him act?
No, actually really like him in Wario, to be fair.
But that was after.
I know, that's after. And
but
I think
that's what most people said before Warrior. They were like, yeah. Warrior happened. Could he act?
I think I have a feeling that he's one of those actors who did really well for a little bit of time. And I was like, you know what, fuck it.
Coasted.
And coasted for the rest. But anyway, and I'm saying that with no knowledge, so take it as you may.
Nick Nolte, if you're listening, Douglas' phone number is.
But you see him actually painting or pretending to paint, acting to paint, whatever, and it slowly morphs into this this ridiculously awesome, depending on your your art sensibilities, but at least for me, the painting just looked beautiful. And it was, you know, there was music in the background, which again, I'm a big music fan. Scorsese also is a huge music fan, especially if, you know, Motown and that kind of...
Rolling Stones, that's all he plays.
Rolling Stones. Rolling Stones is very influenced by those guys.
Yeah, I know.
And it makes sense. And you hear, you know, I think the big song in that movie was... Shades of Grey, what's it called? I can't remember what it's called, but it's very R&B infused. And even if you listen to a movie that we watched recently, Taxi Driver, if you listen to a lot of his movies, there are a lot of R&B and soul songs in his soundtrack. He's very much into that, I think, that side of the music world as well.
You say he's racist?
That's how you take that then. Yes.
So how did you feel like after New York Stories recently realizing that an Italian filmmaker made a 10-year-old do a mural painting better than Nick Nolte in that scene with the Great Beauty?
I didn't feel any way. And better is subjective.
Because that anger in that moment,
yeah.
In the Great Beauty, she's like, ah! And
know,
then, like,
right?
2 seconds later, you see her kind of fixing it up.
I know, and it looks
like,
great.
Oh. Does
yeah.
it? Does it look great?
It looks
at the end. At the end.
Does
it?
At no point.
Yeah,
no.
At the end.
Anyways,
anyway.
I was making
that's,
a joke.
Right.
I know.
That's my scene.
And I'm
and I love it.
Because I can. Whose turn is it?
You.
Yours.
Well, now that Douglas has ruined this list by picking the best scene as fourth, because he's a stupid idiot. Taxi Driver will be remembered for many things. It will be remembered most for this lunatic standing
yep.
in a mirror.
Yep. I remember the first time I watched that movie and I was like, this is where that comes from?
Yeah, I think that's what you're saying every week as I show you classic movies. You're like, this is where
I
go. Yeah.
The echo chamber moment where he's talking to himself, practicing. Unlike Allen Iverson, he's actually practicing. Hey guys, you know how Douglas doesn't like Taxi Driver and he's wrong? If you haven't seen Taxi Driver, let's rectify that tonight.
Is Douglas still wrong though?
He's look, we hold over his wrongness from his earlier
before.
Opinion.
So
yeah.
Even if he's changed it today.
Right. There's still the halo of wrongness that's arose here.
Alright, so my number three scene, Martin Scorsese scene, and I hope Damon will pick this up immediately, is Baby, Why Are You So Wet? Because, guys,
yeah.
Shutter Island is...
Yeah.
Amazing. And more than that,
I remember when I said
dream sequences.
I remember when I said, yeah, I think one of you are going to have the other scene. Yeah, you did. No doubt. The movie's
Baby,
good.
Baby, Why Are You So Wet? And I'm thinking more specifically before the reveal, like just those general dreams, like when we have him going and you see him hold her and turn to ashes. Like even from the first time I saw that movie, those things just stuck out. And
I'd like to thank both of you for taking both one and two.
Jerks. So my number two scene is the scene where number three. No, I've
no,
done
two.
Three things
it's
already.
Three.
It is now number two. For me,
alright,
is where Bradley Cooper starts humping. Oh wait, no, sorry, that's a good version of this movie.
My
goodness,
this guy is a.
But actually, no, it is a scene from the movie that me and Andrew both didn't come 100% positive with today, which is The Wolf of Wall Street, and.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna keep
it's
doing that
it's actually not that scene, even though that scene is great. It's a scene that we've been talking about.
Sad if we don't end this podcast, I'll be there.
It's a scene that me and Andrew have been talking about since
that.
We've watched this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It ends, or in the middle of it, there is spinach, there is Popeye, and there is cocaine. But what it really starts off with is Leonardo DiCaprio. High off of his ass, trying to get home while he is on essentially an overdose of the strongest Quaaludes ever made, or so they tell us.
Which for the whole night, it's been like, it's still feel like,
no? Exactly, right?
Shit, but ain't working.
But apparently, they were just waiting for him to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And...
and what did he say on the phone?
He finds out that he needs to get back home, which is, well, only a mile away.
In a Ferrari.
In a Ferrari. So he gets, he crawls through a lobby, down some stairs, which, by the way, I love that Scorsese does this.
When he's looking down the stairs.
When he's looking down the stairs, you see about 20 or 30 steps. He rolls down all of them, and finally he gets down to the bottom. And he looked, the camera turns back, it's like four steps. It's great.
Yeah, this movie sucks. You guys are right.
He gets in the car, he drives home, and he's narrating this whole time. And he's talking about how, you know, he knows he really shouldn't do this, but it's only a mile away, and he drives the slowest he has ever driven in his life. And somehow, the gods, they looked down on him and smiled, and he got home safe. He got home, not even a scratch on the Ferrari. He saves somebody's life by eating spinach cocaine, and then he wakes up in the morning, and the police are at the door. And he has no... This doesn't make any sense. I mean, unless, well, maybe, you know, they heard something on his telephone. Could it be something like that? And they immediately ask him, did you drive from the country club to your house last night?
In that car.
In a Ferrari.
A noob.
He says, what? And then all of a sudden... The camera pans to the Ferrari, which we saw, right? We actually saw it drive into the driveway last night with not a scratch, unscathed. It was beautiful. You see it now through essentially the eyes of a man who was woken up out of a drunk stupor and now can see what's really happening. And the Ferrari is total. It's wrecked. And that...
There's like trees.
and then all of a sudden, it's like, you know, like, somebody who wakes up...
what actually happened.
Exactly. Somebody who wakes up and sees the result, and immediately it's like, it slaps you in the face, and you're like, oh, that's what happened. And you see what actually happens. You see him crash into a bunch of cars. You see him scrape against driveways and picket fences and all sorts of shit. Incredible. And that was incredible.
It's spinach cocaine.
Spinach
cocaine. I have actually entitled this scene. The scene forever on this podcast shall be known as the Ferrari double take.
I was like, spinach cocaine!
Since you dirtbags, I've decided to take all my movies. Why not? Let's put them high up where Damian wouldn't possibly have them because they're incredible scenes. There's this movie called The Raging Bull. There is a scene. There's one scene in The Raging Bull. Someone is getting beat down and then they decide to get back up again. That is the scene. You all know what happens. Even if you've never seen this movie. You've seen Rocky, right? It's like that, but better.
I love Raging Bull.
No shit.
I suppose I need to watch that movie again.
You think it deserves a rewatch like Taxi Driver? Like, no,
well,
you're...
I have rewatched it already. I watched it the first time, I didn't like it. I did rewatch it with you a few years later and still didn't like it.
Oh, I thought when I watched it with me, it was the first time.
No, I've watched it with you twice.
Oh, did you?
Yes, I have.
I don't remember the second time.
But it was a long time ago, so I think... And especially given recent events... Perhaps I should watch it again.
The only thing that scene is missing. The only scene that is missing is. Ta-da-da! That would be perfect.
Sorry, my number two comes from the beloved Goodfellas, and it is the Copacabana, and more specifically, the date with the girlfriend. at the time he was wooing her. And there is this scene where they go through the back door into the Copacabana.
Yeah.
It's all one take.
It's really cool.
One continuous shot moving in. You see them pull out the table for them, put it down, and like it's a moment in. And I think it just has something to do with the idea of continuous takes in movies. I'm starting to get slightly annoyed by people who go like, continuous take means equal awesome, as opposed to just having something be awesome. It is a great thing in itself, because I can imagine the amount of work it takes to pull it off, right? But there seems to be, I'm starting to feel this conversation going on that if it exists, like we're no longer discussing it being good first, we're saying if it exists, if they did it,
it's awesome.
Equal awesome. Don't even try and add any other words to the sentence. But this one, regardless, is amazing. And what I love about it is that it's not just in a moment in the movie where we see Ray Liotta trying to woo this woman, the movie itself kind of sweeps us off our feet in being that amazing visually for us. I love it. Tango. You happy now?
Step to the woo. Okay. So, in my mind, Martin Scorsese is mafia, so he must have directed all mafia movies. So mine is the one where
the mafia.
Exactly.
And then there are some more mafia.
Yeah.
And
there's the one where Al Pacino, that wasn't him. Yeah. my number one scene.
Idiots. Stop it.
Okay.
This is a podcast.
What's the fucking song? It's hard out here for a pimp. Trying to get someone. The song from Hustle and Flow. That one.
I never watched that movie.
That's not why I don't
listen. And that's not why I'm laughing. I'm laughing because of what my number one is.
Okay, never mind. I'll stop. But I never stopped finding it funny remembering that they got to perform that song at Oscars.
Yeah. Just ran up on stage being super, super ghetto. So good.
Hustle and Flow is actually good. You should watch it.
I have seen it.
No, him, not you.
I've seen teeny tiny snippets, and I just never. John Singleton has not been a guy that I want to watch. I have seen, I think I saw Baby Boy, which was one of his movies, which was horrible, right?
Movie is so terrible.
He just strikes me as.
You prefer that or the Wolf of Wall Street version?
I prefer
this.
Okay. So this what one. John Singleton strikes me as is Tyler Perry, but in the ghetto, essentially. And I don't want
Tyler
that.
Perry.
No, he's the guy that makes only movies with black people in there because you must only have black people in his movies because X and Y, and it seems that way based on the publicity at the time. Anyway, and I don't like that. Anyway,
He makes bad movies. No, just say you don't like his movies because a lot of his movies are bad.
I don't know because I haven't watched very many. but anyway,
what's the one that you've seen?
Baby Boy.
Oh, right.
I know he also did Boys in the Hood, right?
Yeah.
Which I've seen
that
pieces of.
Awesome.
But I don't know. Anyway, Martin Scorsese has directed a lot of things.
Yes.
Some of them aren't necessarily movies. One of them.
Why?
One of them stars Wesley Snipes, and I don't know what these guys are looking
Please don't focus
anyway.
On the stupidity that is happening over here.
So one of the things that Martin Scorsese directed stars Wesley Snipes, along with a whole bunch of other people who meet in like this parking garage and then dance for no reason. While Michael Jackson is singing, "Bad," Martin Scorsese directed the 17-minute movie featurette / video music video for "Bad," sung by Michael Jackson,
I hate you.
And And just for the sheer fuck of it, just for the sheer surprise of my, when did I find this out? My whatever 18-year-old mind or whatever it is that you loves Michael Jackson and used to watch. I remember we had that music video on tape,
Douglas,
and we'd watch it all the time, right?
And that music video.
And for me to now think to myself, that was directed by a master director.
That's
like,
why
wow.
You have to pay your dues.
Exactly. Actually, no, I think at that point he'd done some really good movies and already had, you know, made a name for himself.
Right,
because Michael Jackson can kind of throw money around.
When you
but,
you make deals with the devil, you have to pay the piper.
All right, fair enough.
Michael Jackson literally being the piper.
Yep. But yeah, that is my number one.
You're a bad person.
For all of that.
On May 11th, 1980.
When you were born.
When I was born.
Oh, you're
right,
an old ass man. Old ass
right
man.
Right after Douglas.
I wasn't born in 1980. I was born later than that. You're older than me, son. You're an old ass man.
Old ass man. Goodfellas is incredible.
Yes, it is.
I'll show you a picture.
Yes, I almost said that scene. That was up there. I love
Andrew
that scene.
Seen this picture. Guys, do you enjoy cooking?
Do you like cooking spinach?
Do you enjoy making bad decisions while driving? Do you like driving angry? And I have a movie.
I like that Nick Cage movie.
No, you don't.
You like
nice
puppets.
Try though. Like, it's incredible. It wouldn't have been on my list if two people.
But there's helicopters
on my list.
Helicopters?
Yes. But you two took both my picks for one and two.
Yep.
So I had to sub in other things. So thanks.
So my number one, which I feel ruins all of your lists because you guys have been doing this wrong if this isn't your number one. And I kind of talked to Douglas about it as to why I love this scene so much just earlier. And it's from Taxi Driver. And it's a final scene of the movie. It's what I call High Travis, where we see Sybil jump into the back of Travis Bickle's cab. And it's a scene which I said at the beginning of my list I was picking a very visual list. This isn't a very visual scene, but it's more of a rediscovering scene when it comes to the movie, because as I explained to Douglas earlier, it's the moment in the movie where you realize that there is something strange about this world that we have been inhabiting for the last 2 hours in Taxi Driver, and that there are fantasies and dreams occurring. And we start to reevaluate the entire 2 hours we just watched and took on some surface level completely seriously. And it's one that throws me for a loop every time I sit down to watch Taxi Driver. I think I've seen it like around 4 or 5 times at this point. And I haven't yet determined exactly where the dream begins and ends yet watching that movie.
You're making an assumption that a dream does begin and a dream does end. It's a possibility, unless there are some things out there that I don't know. Isn't it possible that there is no dream? Like, it's possible.
At the very least, that end scene has to be a dream.
It's a dream within a dream.
Not necessarily.
In my mind.
And remember, I said to you why that kind of doesn't make sense.
My interpretation is at the very least that end scene itself is a dream.
I think that the why are you wet scene is more profound than that scene. Because up until that scene, you had, like, they've been angling you to, there might be something wrong with him. But you had no context for why, like, what would have happened to trigger any of this. And then when you see it, you go, oh no, I guess he's crazy as fuck because this happened. And you go, yeah. Alright. The entire time you saw him seeing shit and you're like, what is... Am I crazy? Is this movie crazy? What is happening? And then you see that scene and you go, alright, Scorsese. Congratulations. you've ruined everything. And I love... Like, that scene, it would have been my number two.
although it is the scene that I think he, like, it is a, it is placed so perfectly, because every time you watch the movie, because when you rewatch a movie, you realize that from the get-go, from the movie starts, there have been clues throughout the movie pointing to the fact that this guy has lost his goddamn
life. This movie is very Fight Club-esque.
The Hugo scene where he gives you a history of movies, once you go into the guy's studio, and like, that is it, that scene is probably the best scene of any movie that has ever been put. Like, it is incredible.
So
he told the history of cinema in like 10 minutes, and from start to finish, it is just like, when people say movie magic, people think of Transformers and other type of nonsense. That is the best like, he was able to convey the history of film in 10 minutes to absolutely everybody, and he made it look and sound incredible. Like, you just watch it and you didn't even realize what was happening until like halfway through. You're like, I don't know how Scorsese is doing this, but I'm fairly sure he's the only person that can. Like, he's a master. You cannot do that and then have people look at you and go, he's incredible.
Like, I haven't done this as yet, but I imagine a moment like that, especially with Hugo. If you were to show a movie like Hugo to a child today, they would watch it and be happy to have you go, would you like to see these movies now? And that's what I think is probably what I love Hugo for the most, is that it helps point people in a direction of saying, you might enjoy this, which is what I generally enjoy why we do this podcast, which is saying, guys, you might like this movie, go ahead and try it.
Yeah, like The Wolf of Wall Street.
Like The Wolf of Wall Street.
Don't listen to these naysayers.
But a couple other honorable mentions on my list, which I didn't mention. Gangs of New York, a film which is gone.
Wrapped in the Flag.
No, not Wrapping the Flag. My favorite, one of my favorite moments, even though that is a great moment, one of my favorite moments is actually the death of Walter McGinn, which is played by, I can't remember his name right now.
Is that Liam Neeson?
No, not Liam Neeson. It's
is that the guy with the scar?
The guard.
Oh, Brendan Gleeson.
Brendan Gleeson.
Okay.
Where, after all sorts of shit, Daniel Day-Lewis goes up there, he's a barbershop owner now, and just takes the club and beats the shit out of him and gives like an angry tone, and I love that moment. I don't know why, it's just always stuck with me. I'm a bad person, sure.
I don't really remember that movie very much.
It's not real great.
Yeah, I remember not like
this. It's not amazing. But I remember loving it at the time, and now it's just kind of dwindled with me. Hitler Made a Mistake, and this scene comes from The King of Comedy, which I recently rewatched. The moment when Rupert Pupkin decides to take his sort of girlfriend over to Jerry Lewis's house randomly, because
that's a good scene in which Jerry Lewis invited him
to his summer house.
So
it's amazing, it's awkward, it's hilarious.
If
you like dark comedy.
Andrew was watching that movie today, and I decided, because I have seen the movie already. Again, a long time ago. No, we didn't.
I think
okay. I wasn't here for it. But I had seen it before that anyway. So I've seen it a long time ago. I remember like the basic whatever it is. And I decided I'm going to try and watch it with Andrew. And that was the scene. That's how I know the scene is good. That was the scene where I was like, fuck it. I can't deal with this anymore. I have to go away. And I got up and I went away.
And of course, I love it that he begins it, because they're trying to be, the girl is trying to be nice, he's trying to be somewhat nice for a little bit, Jerry Lewis, and Rupert is trying to be like, what's the problem? And he's like, alright, we made a mistake, and Lewis is just like, Hitler made a mistake too, and he just bookends it with that line, and I'm like, yes, I love it. The Departed, you talked about all the great moments in that movie. One moment, because I actually only watched like the first hour again recently, and I think one of my favorite scenes is when they leave the porn theater and they're doing that little cat and mouse chase scene. But more importantly, I think the scene that caught me what I was rewatching earlier was Do You Know What We Do Here? Which is the first time that DiCaprio meets Martin Sheen, and I just love that banter between everyone. I think it's amazing. But another film which I rewatched recently from Scorsese, The Aviator, which is a movie that I didn't really like when I first saw it.
I love that movie.
And I haven't revisited since. And today, this week being the first in a decade of watching that movie again, it's an amazing movie. I love what he does with the colors in that movie. But there's, and everyone kind of focuses on the big Howard Hughes crazy moments.
Mm-hmm.
But the one moment in that movie which stuck with me rewatching it was after the big crash,
mm-hmm.
when he's in the hospital, all plastered up and everything, and he starts talking about the flowers. People are asking him about the flowers. Like, people sent a billion flowers and he sent them all out, obviously, because he is the crazy Howard Hughes guy. But he has this one pot of flowers in there, talking about how he really likes the colors in those flowers. And I don't know why, but something about that scene just seemed right with that movie.
I like the crash scene.
You like the crash scene is awesome.
It's incredible.
And of course, Kate Blanchett being Kate Hepburn.
Oh yeah, that's great. That accent that she puts on, marvelous.
Can someone tell Kate Blanchett that she can never do accents again? Like, ever, ever, ever. Wasn't she in Kingdom of the Crystal Skull?
Yeah, she was.
With that
beautiful
German accent.
Yeah.
Oh, delicious. Like, the worst German accent.
I don't remember. That movie, I kind of try and block out, so I don't remember.
Honestly,
yeah.
I have a certain chapter in movie making in my mind for when actors conscientiously recognize that they're going to be in a bad movie and they decide to go the full 100 with their characters.
If I'm going to be remembered for being in a shitty movie, I'm going to be remembered
for being in a shitty
movie. Alright, fine. If that's the way you're looking at it, then fine. She did a masterful job.
I remember Nuke in the Fridge.
I remember a giant alien spaceship. And I remember what is quite possibly the worst German accent.
And you know what's sad is I actually really liked that movie up until The Fridge.
No, you don't.
No, I did.
Up until The Fridge,
yeah.
Really early.
The Fridge.
You mean like 3 minutes into the movie?
No, The Fridge
really
is
early.
Like halfway through the movie.
No, no.
Dog, are you high?
The Fridge is in the opening sequence.
Okay. No, it's not.
The Fridge is in the opening sequence.
You remember every Indiana Jones movie opens with its own adventure that's already started?
That
the
is the first
is
adventure.
In the open adventure.
The first one.
Yeah.
Well,
they go into the warehouse.
Wrong, then.
He escapes, there's a nuke, he hops into a fridge, and then the movie starts.
Maybe I'm thinking
and it
wrong,
was
then.
Terrible.
Because I remember
then.
Liking like maybe the first half hour to 45
you don't
minutes.
Dog.
No?
You don't remember like
right,
you remember
enough.
Liking Indiana Jones and you're compositing that fact onto this piece of garbage. Nothing about that movie.
Anyways, we've crossed the 2 hour mark, which means I have lots of editing work to do.
Yeah, you do.
And I think we should say goodnight.
I like fudge.
You like fudge. That's what Damien is saying on Twitter over at Damien_White. Douglas, he's over on Twitter shouting about finding that
Taxi Driver sucks.
And I'm there for the last week been talking about Scorsese movies and wondering how many he actually cameoed in, because I spotted a lot of
all of
this last week.
He's in Taxi Driver. I kind of like Taxi Driver now.
So, as always, you can find the podcast over at gmail.com. Also, iTunes and Stitcher. Feel free to subscribe, rate, and review the show over on iTunes.
Feel free to vote.
It's your God-given right!
Unless you went to prison, then.
That's true.
Thank you so much for listening.
I like fudge.